Welcome back and welcome into the second hour of today's show. Listen, this will pass, but a lot of people, there's 40-odd thousand cars come into Letterkenny every single day. There's a lot of people live in the town, right? It's the major population centre, and all roads go through Letterkenny if you live in the north of the county. So you can imagine that we're not trying to over-amplify it. We are getting hundreds of comments in relation to it, and we are here to sort of platform what is concerning people. It'd be remiss of us not to keep talking about it for the time being. Roads in Letterkenny this morning, there's bad flooding at the roundabout onto the dual carriageway. Someone referenced that yesterday as well, actually, and they were really peed off about it. Once again, traffic in Letterkenny is jammed. Why not supply extra bus services to help reduce the volume of traffic on the roads? There is a car broken down on the road from Illistrin to Mountaintop roundabout. This is causing delays. It's adding to delays. The delays are already there. Another, obviously, the planners don't give two hoots about the public. Roadworks could be at night, as throughout Europe, or in January after the Christmas rush. Instead, it's all for the convenience of contractors. Well, the works that will be going on, as far as I'm aware, as part of active travel down at the Mount Errigal Hotel area, they will be at night. Letterkenny's traffic situation has been recently designed and built to the way it is currently, a massive deflection from other more prominent issues facing the people of Donegal. We can see this is the case because of the amount of airtime Highland Radio gives to Letterkenny traffic chaos, whilst at the same time never calling out the people who just recently engineered and built Letterkenny's roads to be the way they are. Well, interesting comment. I'm not sure what the point you're exactly trying to make, to be honest with you. But you, maybe in the 17th, 18th, 19th century, you drag people out into the market square or something. That's not how things are done now. People have rights to privacy. People have right to a good reputation. Who ultimately, specifically, is responsible for something? Well, you know, who signs off on it? Who votes for it? Who designs it? A team design it. But those designs go through what is effectively the democratic process and have to be voted on by councillors. So I don't know what you want. Is it heads on a stick, what you want us to do? But as I say, you know, we are covering this within the rules of how it's covered. And it's a very significant issue for a lot of people. It may not be terribly significant to you, but maybe we'll be talking shortly about something that is important to you and not to others. That's generally the way it goes. We can't all have our own personal radio station or programme that talks only to what we're interested in all of the time. Tomorrow we are heading to the Finn Valley College in Stranorlar, so I'll be leaving home about 3 a.m. It's in advance of the launch of their album, Our Donegal, so we wanted to go along and celebrate that. Now, we have our Friday panel. You know the way it is when we're out and about. The show is as is normal, but with the added treat of in-studio guests relevant to where we are. So we're going to have live music from students and staff. There's going to be poetry performances and all that interwoven in between our regular 9 till noon show. So that's us live tomorrow from 9 a.m. from the Finn Valley College in Stranorlar. Really looking forward to getting back to the Twin Towns. Now, some of your requests and dedications, which we really love to see on, and we generally read them out about now. A very happy 86th birthday to Nellie McCallion, who's in Muff. Warmest wishes from Australia, America, County Meath and Inishowen, from your 5 daughters, your 7 sons, their partners, 38 grandchildren and 20 plus great-grandchildren. Wow, Nelly, what an amazing scale of a family you have. A very happy 86th birthday from all over the world, from all of your siblings and theirs, and also, not your siblings, I'm sure your siblings as well, your children and theirs. And from all of us here at Highland Radio, Nelly, happy birthday. Lena McMonagall in St. Eunan's Terrace, Letterkenny, it's your birthday today. A very happy birthday to you, Lena. That's coming in from your friends and your family and your neighbours. Could you please wish Shan Gallagher, Donegal Road Ballybuffet, a very happy birthday. Have a great day, Mum. Lots of love from Shauna and John. Happy birthday, Anne, from us all here as well. Could you please wish Joseph Sweeney a very happy 21st birthday today from all on the bus 72 in Inishowen, Letterkenny. Enjoy Joseph, really, because, you know, 21 is probably the last big birthday you celebrate before 30, if the truth be told, unless you're very well looked after. So it's going to be a while before you have a landmark birthday, I think. So happy birthday to you, Joseph. Could you please play a birthday request for my friend Anne Gallagher, Donegal Road in Ballybuffet? Lots of love, this time from Tara. and they're looking for a song, which we'll pass on. I'm sure it will get played down the line at some point. We don't play music, but that's grand. So again, happy birthday to you, Anne, a very popular lady today. Now, let's have a chat to Kevin, who joins us now. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to have you on the show. Now, you are, I suppose, really a relatively early adapter to the e-scooter. You've been getting about on one now for 4 years. I mean, I know they've been around longer than that, but I think really, certainly locally, coming into sort of regular use, you've been at it for quite some time, Kevin. What did it bring to your life in terms of, you know, getting about and stuff?
Well, up until around 5 years ago, I used to live down off the main street, and I moved up to Mountain Top, and I can't drive. And you're stranded up here. There's not much facilities or shops, and I got the scooter, and it really changed my life. It gave me a freedom. I wasn't depending on the bus service, which there isn't really a great amount of service there. And the cost of taxis was terrible. So it saved me money too. Freedom and, you know, cost.
And in terms of getting about, I mean, wherever you are in Letterkenny, within reason, I mean, you've got the range, you can go up to 20 kilometres per hour, you know, you can get about wherever the hell you like. It's that's a big advantage.
It's ideal for the town. Now, not so much in the country, but getting around the town, you're not needing a big range. You're not needing speed or anything. You can fold it up as well. It's just a handy way of getting about.
Right. So in terms of getting about and, you know, your own personal safety, I mean, obviously you're supposedly not to allowed to cycle them on or use them, sorry, on footpaths, etc. Do you comply with that? You use it on the roads? And if so, well, what's that like?
Luckily, I'm quite confident on the scooter. I know there are friends of mine that wouldn't be so confident. So initially, I was on the pavement, but for the past 3 years, it's all been the road. But I do remember first time I went out on the road. It was daunting, particularly the road, you know, down Mountain Top, down towards the hospital. It's a busy road. And, took a while to get comfortable with it.
I've said this before on the show too. I think when you're scooting, you know, because of the width of them and the way you might stand on them, the profile's even smaller than a cyclist. And, you know, I've seen scooters on the roads, and I thought, well, I would feel very vulnerable if that was me, because it's almost like you're half the width of a cyclist.
Yes, and another thing people don't really realise, I don't think, is the wind, because you are vertical, the wind can swing you around. Mm. So, you know, yeah, you really do have to be careful. And it's not too bad going through, you know, like estates and smaller, less busy roads, but certainly on the main road, you know, you're concerned if there's a crosswind. Like, I wouldn't go out if it's too breezy on the scooter, because all it takes is a gust, and you can just get blown. Might only be a couple of feet, but that's enough, you know, on the road. Mm. So wind is a big one that I think a lot of people don't realise.
There does seem to be a trend or a habit amongst people using scooters. We heard it, in fact, from Garda Grani on Tuesday, to wear dark clothing. Do you be conscious of that yourself? By the sounds of it, you really do want to be seen, Kevin. That's the vibe I'm getting off you.
Yes. And again, initially around before, probably beyond 3 years, I didn't wear a high-vis, but I thoroughly recommend it, particularly this time of year. You're not visible. A lot of people do wear dark clothes, and I think the high vis is an important one. I know it's not implemented that you have to, but I would severely recommend it.
Yeah, because, you know, the lights on a scooter will get you by the law, but they're tiny, you know, especially the wee red light behind, you know, it's tiny. Now, it's there, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's very easy to identify other vehicles by their tail lights. The scooters, not so, especially on a wet, cold, windy evening.
No, from the front, you'll see, but from the back, it's just a little square, you know, and it's very low to the ground. So for a driver to, no, for it to be visible to a driver, it's not great. So, you know, so the high vis is certainly, I think, essential.
So, Kevin, you know, obviously we can be very judgy and critical. I try and avoid being so, but sometimes maybe I come across that way, but it's not my intention, you know, to sort of give out to scooterers on footpaths. Now, you've told a story, and it's quite breezy here if you were going down Mountaintop today, for example, but you talked of how you transitioned from the footpath onto the road. Why do you think so many still go up and down the footpaths? You know, you'll see them coming up the mountaintop on the far side or on the near side. You know, there seems to be, it seems to be very ad hoc. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
I think, well, some people just won't comply with the rules. I think that's definitely a point. But another thing is they're scared. It is daunting. I've experienced, you're not treated well on the roads. There is a hostility towards people on scooters, and I get where it comes from. But if we have to comply with the rules of the road and be on them, I think we should be afforded the same respect.
People don't people don't want you on the footpaths, and then people don't want you on the roads. So it's a catch 22.
Yes.
And you've been intimidated by drivers whilst on the roads as well, haven't you?
It's daily you'll get something. I mean, on Tuesday when you were speaking about it, that's what instigated me to send the email. Mm. Because that day in particular, I was on the scooter down there where the police station is, and a car was on the other side of the road and decided to swerve into me to give me a fright and then swerve round. Oh. Now, that's happened twice in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's completely unacceptable.
Trying to scare you. Mm. If you're on the road, you're getting people shouting out the window, get on the pavement, people splashing you purposefully, coming up beside you. It's just, there's something, most days you're going to get something.
Yeah, and some of the old stuff you mentioned, which would be really quite startling, is cars beeping at you just as they pass.
Or revving up.
Yeah, or trying to cut you off.
Cut you off if you're on the inside, maybe on a cycle lane, and they're stuck in traffic. Some cars will just pull in so you can't get by on the road. Mm. Again, it's just total disrespect, and that is scaring scooter
users. It's funny because,
and that is,
I hear where you're coming from, and yet we have a cohort of cyclists who choose not to use cycle lanes that are provided for them and would prefer to run the gauntlet of the traffic, something you're very much trying to avoid. So if there are more cycle lanes with the active travel around Letterkenny, that's good news for you then, is it? And you believe other scooter riders that they will they will welcome these cycle lanes and use them?
Certainly, 100%. The areas in town that have the cycle lanes, it's refreshing being on those routes. Mm. You're not on edge. You're not worried that someone's going to come up and beep or swear or, you know, try to scare you. But obviously, there aren't enough cycle lanes in town.
Yeah.
But I think another thing is, if the infrastructure was there, if there was possibly a long-term plan, and then you could encourage people to use scooters, particularly people that live within the town, there is a traffic problem. And if the cycle lanes were there, the infrastructure was there, you could take a bit of heat off the traffic in town. So there's a case there too.
All right, OK. Listen, thanks for your insights, Kevin. I do appreciate that. It's always good to hear different points of views and the experience of different road users. So fair play to you for emailing in, and thanks for coming on and explaining your experiences so well. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I do just one more thing.
Okay.
I get where the... Right, OK, right.
No, so I'm saying yes, no. Kevin. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Go on, the one more thing, please.
I can get where the hostility comes from, particularly a few years ago. You would see scooter users flying up and down the main street. No, it's intimidating then for pedestrians. So I can see where the hostility comes from, but it's not going to get any better if people are intimidating scooter users on the road. And I think if, you know, that was known, more people would go on the roads and it would eventually work better.
Yeah. It's about using the shared space, isn't it? All right, Kevin, thanks very much for your time. 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts. We've got some very interesting conversations coming up for you too. We have the 2025 Letterkenny Chamber Hall of Famers. We're looking forward to getting them into studio, Eunan and Rachel McIntyre. They're going to be joining me very shortly. We're also going to touch base with the London Donegal Association Person of the Year as well. We had a quick chat to him when we were over in London, but no harm just checking in to congratulate him on his wonderful award. That and so much more besides just around the corner. Last weekend, Eunan and Rachel McIntyre, the owners of Max Deli, High Road in Letterkenny, received the Letterkenny Chamber Hall of Fame Award. And it is a really prestigious award where it's the community, the business community, not just in Letterkenny now, but far and wide, celebrate the achievements and contribution of a business. So Eunan and Rachel, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks.
And it is a lovely honour, Eunan.
Yes, it's a great privilege for us to be recognised by the local community. And when we got a shock ourselves, and when we were at the dance and seeing great companies from all over, from Inishowen, all over Donegal, small companies and big companies at the dance, it was a great privilege for us. And to be on the stage with another local business of Alcorn's, who's a great business, you know. And,
yeah.
Very good people.
Rachel, it all started back in 1990, but before that, the 2 years were over in America together, were you?
That's right, yeah. We were there from 83 to 90.
And was it your average American experience, or what were you doing?
Well, it was very different than the 80s compared to now. It wasn't just we take a gap year, something like that. It was out of necessity. We had to emigrate at that stage. So
there was multiple recessions, not least in the 80s.
Right, yeah.
Interest rates 15-16% on mortgages and stuff in the 80s.
Absolutely. So, and that's what Eunan went over. He was invited over to play football for the county Donegal team in New York. And then I followed over after that, you know, and there was no work here at the time. So we stayed there until 1990. We decided to come back home then.
Yeah. And when you came back, Eunan, you were working for other people at that time, were you?
When we came back in 1990...
Can I just ask you to get a wee bit behind that microphone you a little bit closer, because you've got a lovely soft voice, Rachel. Yeah. So go ahead, Eunan. Yeah.
When we came back in 1990, as my father said, things are changing here, but when we go back, the things weren't as good as we thought, and... I got a job for Pretty.
Do you think he was he sold you on? Did he? Come on!
I think he was glad to see his home. I think he was glad to see his home, and we were glad to get home too.
Yeah.
And then we got with Seamus McEwen, gave me a job in McEwen Electric at the time, and Rachel worked next door with Lawrence Blake in Mace shop. And
so whose idea was it then to sort of go out on your own, and how did that conversation go? Rachel?
Well, I suppose Lawrence had, he opened a second shop on the High Road in Eugene O'Donnell's building, which is no longer there now. But then Lawrence had other interests at that time. You know, he had a supermarket, another supermarket, and another restaurant at the time. So he asked us if we'd want to continue taking that on. He wanted to focus on these.
So
is
this on
businesses.
The current location? Is it no?
No.
No, the location was down per solo.
Okay,
shop down
right,
in that
yeah,
area there.
Yeah.
There was a Mace shop there, okay, and Rachel cool. worked in that.
Oh, I worked in that, but then the High Road building is no longer there. It was knocked down. Many aircraft is there now.
Right.
And so it was an old building, and it was 600 square feet. It was a unit that had been previously rented by Eugene O'Donnell himself, you know, or he owned it. And so we took it over just in October 1990. We took it over from Lawrence, and we didn't know what we were doing, but we opened 7 days a week from about 8 in the morning to about 11 at night, you know. And we tried everything. The grocery trade was even very tough then, you know, so we decided to get into fresh foods. We'd seen a lot of that in delis in New York. So we started doing fresh food, salads, sandwiches, you know, whatever we could do ourselves, you know. Sometimes we started initially at home, and then we kind of started making on the spot then in the shop, you know. And that sort of turned our business around, you know, at that time.
Yeah, huge time commitment, Eunan, by the sounds of things, because I would say one of you was on site at one stage or other over the 7 days, if not both. And then, you know, you've taken on another arm of the business, and that's at home, right? Or in the, you know what I mean? So you were fully invested at this point, time-wise.
Fully invested time-wise, and we're a young kid, Ronan, who's in the business now, thank God, but Ronan was only 9 months or 10 months at the time when we came home. And but we're very lucky. Like, when we started, next door to us was a very good shop, a very good grocery shop at John Dunn's, and he opened at 8 o'clock at night, and we started opening, and nobody came into our shop during the day, but after we had a great community service too, and after 8 o'clock everybody in the locality used to come into us because they couldn't pass John Dunn, and we went to John years later to tell John if he'd open another hour we would never survive. We did all we did all our trade from 8 to 11, but John says there's plenty for both of us here.
Do you think that kind of instilled, if it wasn't already there, or copper fastened, the importance of the loyalty of customers? Because you could see straight up there that they were incredibly loyal to this man, and
yes,
what was he doing right?
That's it.
What can we employ?
We learned a lot from John Dunn. John was a real community man in the area, and we always looked up to John and his family and that, and they were all, when we started the construction next door in 95, Rachel, we tried to make it a community hub for the local area. I just see that we're in the same timeline as Highland Radio with 35 years in business. You opened in March, we opened in October that year.
But you'd have seen enough over the 5 years, Rachel, to realise, look, we can make something here in 95. But, I mean, obviously that all has to be funded. It feels like a gamble, I presume, at the time, did it? Or?
Yeah, it was a huge risk at the time. We bought the site with the intention of building at some point because it was a vacant field where we are now, and where Beechwood Park estate is now, you know. That was completely vacant field. John Crossan had bought the site, and he was going to build all those houses, and he actually had a site on the road available, and the credit union had decided they didn't want it, so we got second option, and we got, thankfully, Joe Glenfield from the First Active at that time. He must have saw some potential there, so he...
He saw your box for the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
It was about two good years of that we got through the sandwiches.
Buildings are going to go up in price, you know. He saw a bit of potential for the bank there, I think, as well.
But so he gave us the funding.
Which is great, that decision. And, you know, there's little critical things can happen. And I can sure at that point where you say, look, that's been approved now.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
It's a lovely feeling, isn't it?
It's a lovely feeling. And what happens is we built it in stages. We had to get it up as quick as possible because we're taking all the money out of the small shop, of the 600 square shop. So every 3 or 4 months we had to make the payment, and it started off very tough. So we just got onto the wire and got it done.
So what was the structure of the business then early on? Because there was the tie-in with Mace there, but you had sort of seen over the previous years, you know, what was working really well for you in terms of, you know, income and all that type of stuff. So what was the... When opened, what was the shop at that point, Eunan?
Well, when we opened the new shop with the deli end of it going so well next door, as you say, we've said this is the opportunity for us now to expand that area.
Right.
So we opened up with 12 seats in the shop originally, and at the time, Voices of the Bottom of Town were doing good business in that, but very little people were doing sitting in a grocery shop, and even the Mace people said that'll never work at the time. And within a couple of years, we went to 24 and now 30, and we're up to about 60 now.
Yeah, because I think particularly in an urban area, it does seem that it shouldn't work as well as it does.
That's right, yeah.
But obviously there was enough in the grocery side of things, Rachel, that you wanted to retain that and not go full calf, full deli, full restaurant. Did that ever cross your mind? Or
Well, we always had customers that needed to come in for the paper.
For a few bits.
And their milk and, the bread and things like that. You know, and we needed those customers as well, the lottery and things like that, to bring people in and then hopefully, you know, the deli. They worked well together at that point, you know.
Mm.
Now, as it turned out then, in later years, maybe the Lidl's and the Aldi's and things like that, you know, kind of came into the town, and groceries it was far too competitive for us to compete with them in prices and things like that. So we kept reducing down the grocery end of the business. And we kept developing the fresh foods more, and our seating, and putting in kitchens and, you know, employing people, you know, chefs and people who were able to.
You never stood still for too long then. I mean, is there a year between now and 1995 that you weren't doing something?
every 3 or 4 years, we look to see how we can improve. Now, the young fella, Roland, stepping up to the plate now, and he's pushing on. Myself and Rachel, we're trying to step back a wee bit, but he's pushing on. And in the last year, he's brought in a new bakery and offices above the bakery, and that's been a big improvement. And it's we find it very a far more lean system of working and manufacturing, and it's helping the staff. They're not crowded into a small kitchen working on top of each other. Everybody has their area now and has a place of work, and that was due to Leo and Donegal Enterprise in the early days with Michael Tunney and that, and that they sent up good people for lean, the lean manufacturing, that really helped us. And Donegal and ETB was helpful. And SkillNet too, very helpful.
I think it's really good that I mean, it sounds to me like for you guys, every day is a learning day. Mm-hmm. And if there's an opportunity of growth or expansion in learning, that, you know, you're never too long in the game to learn it. Rachel, there's something too that you have to retain, though, isn't there, in a business like yours? Okay, because you can get too big too quick. Or you can lose what brings people in the door in the first place. So whilst you are extending here or changing there, or adding, there's something there presumably you have to retain, that experience for the customer, especially ones that have been in there since 95.
Oh, absolutely. We have to be very mindful, you know, of the people who come in and they feel comfortable. You know, still a comfortable place, and it's, you know, everyone from, you know, we can cater for children, we can cater for, you know, retirees. You know, we're trying to, maybe we have too big of a range, but we try to cater for everybody, you know. And that sort of has helped us to stay in our business over the years, you know. Mm. Plus the loyalty of the customers, you know, the local Letterkenny people, and also the people coming from all over the county, you know, if they're coming in to shop or they're coming to visit people
in
the hospital.
Of that experience. It's part of that experience. Yeah, we'll grab lunch in Max or whatever it might be. So, you know, Eunan, it's like the food element of it, you know, going from, you know, sandwiches to outside catering, all of that growth. How conscious do you have to be that you're growing within the frame of the business, so to speak?
You know? Well, you're working all the time on growth, but you're also working on quality and experience, as you said, Greg, for the staff. But we take a lot of feedback. We look for feedback from customers all the time, and we look for ideas from the customers and ideas from the staff. How can we improve? So we have again, back to the lean, so we have meetings with the staff every morning, or not every morning, two mornings a week. We just had one this morning, Tuesdays and Thursday, and they only last 6 or 7 minutes. They're called huddle meetings, and they come up with ideas, and we'll try them and see if they work. We'll learn from that,
And but that gives the staff a sense of ownership on the project too, doesn't it? It's really it's so critical that, and I'm not surprised it's so successful with that type of ethos where every member of staff feels part of the company and that their opinion matters and theirs could be the next great idea. Rachel, when you run a business like yous are doing, whereby you're very conscious of your place in the community, right? So in terms of picking up the few bits or, you know, that familiar experience, I'd imagine it must be very difficult when you get to a point that you say, we're going to have to look at the prices here, or, you know, the input charges are such that we just can't keep that soup and a sandwich at that rate. How much can we put it up? Like, I get the feeling from you guys that it's as much about, obviously, you having to run a business, but also how much maybe you're potentially putting on your customers.
Yeah, well, it's finding the balance.
Yeah.
You know, we work hard at that. But like everybody, I mean, you know, everybody's struggling at the moment with rising costs, you know, food costs. I mean, it's not just relevant to businesses, it's relevant to homes, you know, right across the country, you know. So we don't see ourselves any different. We just have to keep looking at what we're doing, trying to, if we have to increase, we do them within a certain margin that is not going to have too much of an impact on our regular customers, because we have customers that come in maybe 2 or 3 times a day, you
that's
know.
That's what I'm saying.
So we have to be very mindful of those.
It just makes it extra tricky, is really what I was kind of getting at, to try and sort of, you know, take into consideration the stuff that we don't see, you know, the price of a box of eggs. You know, we don't think about that as consumers. We just think about, why is that Tipex beside the steak sandwich?
Good, very good.
right, so I've tried to phrase this right. So yes, you're still very active, right? But I think maybe Union sees more in Ronan taking everything. And maybe I don't know about you, Rachel, right? But this fella's ready for the golf course and the caravan, right? But come here. Like, where do you see the business going from here, either of you? I mean, you're in a fantastic position. Actually, there's one thing I want to reference here specifically is the level of employment. You talked about the amount of staff, 30 staff. Sometimes if an IT company was opening and creating 30 jobs in the collab, you might even have a minister up coming cutting the tape, right? And sometimes I think there's a little bit of a snobbery about really good, local, sustainable jobs, right? And to be employing 30 people, 30 mortgages potentially, 30 rents, 30 cars, whatever it might be. I mean, to be able to have a business that sustains you guys but also employs 30 people in this day and age, I think it's amazing, you know. I really do. And I sometimes don't think there's enough focus on that personally too, especially with locally owned, you know, small, medium, large-sized businesses.
Well, we're very lucky, Greg. Rachel and Laura now hire the staff and they hire good people, and we try to retain them as much as possible. The people move on and move to other jobs, but it's a responsibility in us to keep the business going and make it that they're secure in their jobs, and every day they come in that they know what they're coming into and that they're happy to come to work. And that's what we work hard at that.
How do you work together, Rachel, right? The yin and the yang. Who's the person that's looking to go in and borrow €5 million to take over half Upper Main Street, and who's the one saying, nah, we're all right?
That would be Ronan. That'd be
Ronan. I didn't want to be sexist, but I guess that.
We're getting to
But isn't that, is that how, you know, I mean, we talk about everything, but about your partnership, right? Because you this success is... because you and Union work together, and there's always checks and balances in that. So what has worked so well in your business relationship, do you think, Rachel?
Well, I suppose our chores have been, they're very divided. You know, Union looks after the people, the customers. He's on the floor, whereas I'm in the back office and I deal a lot with the staff and the accounts end of it. So our roles are very different and very varied. Sometimes they overlap.
This sounds a little bit like, how is it successful? We stay out of each other's way. That's not the answer. I'm sure there's much more to it than that. But
family business is you know, and anybody who knows family business is tough in a way when everybody's working in family, because it can get very tense sometimes, because we all have different ideas and it's brought home to the kitchen table, and what we're trying now is to get away from that. And but in the early days, it was work. We talked about work all the time and It sometimes tires you out. So now we've got a better structure.
To be honest, I think pressure is a privilege, though, because not everyone gets to enjoy it, you know. And it really is. People say you're under pressure. Well, pressure is a privilege. Mm-hmm. I'm so lucky to be, in a position whereby you can have that, because so many people don't, and that's why I do see it as a privilege. A lot of people messaging about the little things. The little things that make an experience nice, that you don't see in all places, but you see in yours, you know, topping up teapots, stuff like that. You know, that. And I think other businesses can learn from successful businesses like yours. It is the big stuff's great, but it's the little stuff that can make a difference too, Rachel.
Again, that's Union. Well, mainly looking after the customers.
As we were in America, that was common in all the delis and restaurants and coffee shops that we went to. The top-ups were just taken as granted, so we started that, and that has been a great success.
It's just, again,
simple,
but so effective. Yeah. Congratulations, Union and Rachel, and all the team at Max Mesa, fantastic community hub where the top-up of coffee is always welcome. I didn't see that before I read it. That's from James. Greg, could you wish Union and Rachel all the best from me? Two lovely people, worked hard, deserved everything they got. Union and me started school together. Great businessman. That comes in from Union McGee, Union McNamee.
Yeah.
Huge congratulations to Union and Rachel and family and staff members. Very well deserved. Wishing you many more years of continued success. The Finn family, Mountaintop. Best wishes to Rachel and Union from Dennis Sheridan. Congratulations to Union, Rachel and staff. Very well deserved. Brilliant establishment from the Henderson family in Letterkenny. They continue to come in. As I say, it's a lovely honour for you. And by all accounts, well deserved.
There's a lot of people we'd like to thank.
Take your time. Go ahead, Rachel.
Where do I start? Well, first of all, our staff, have been with us and stood by us for many years and take great pride in what they do. Our customers, who have been very loyal over the years and very forgiving when we don't always get things right. I'd like to, as well, other business owners who have been great support to us over the years. The local enterprise board, Michael Tunney, Ivan McCarron, Skillsnet, Siobhan Grant, and also in recent times, Dervla at the ETB. You know, they've been a huge help in helping us train our staff and, help us personally. You know, we've had a network where we've done courses ourselves, and it's great to have somewhere like the local enterprise board where we went and we were able to kind of, if we had problems, we could sort them out with other business owners who are going through the same problems, you know. And then more recently, obviously, we want to thank the Letterkenny Chamber, Tony Forrester and Jimmy Stafford for thinking of us, and the committee, and who worked very hard. And, and we really appreciate the award.
Okay.
And then we would just like to thank, we get financial help in that from Cahill Ortiz. And then we have a fellow working every week with us, and he's in the background, Jared McKinley. And he keeps us to see, are we doing well this week or are we not doing well next week, you know? And we will have to work harder. So people like that, and good advice down the line from people like Michael Meehan and Seamus McGrory and all that. So it was a whole team effort. And any time, we always ask for help. That's one thing. We don't know it all. We ask for help all the time, whatever we're doing. And ask them for advice.
Great food in Max. Love going there during my working years next door. Beautiful, fresh food delivers every time. At a time of real difficulty, Union and his lovely wife went out of their way to provide soup and sandwiches to our home. The award they received is recognition of their hard work, but let's not forget the kind people that they are. We haven't forgotten them. They don't feel the need to put the name to it, but I think we all know perhaps what they're talking about. Both of you, thank you very much indeed. Continued success.
And thanks for the help, Greg.
And good luck getting out, Union. I don't think it's going to happen. All right, that's Union and Rachel McIntyre.